Welcome to the BaseCS podcast, where we explore the basics of computer science concepts. I'm your host, Saran, founder of Code Newbie.
And I'm Vaidehi Joshi, author and developer.
And she is the brilliant mind behind the BaseCS blog series. This episode is proudly brought to you by the fine folks at Twilio. We actually set up a podcast call-in hotline, which I've never done before. Let's see how this works. So after listening to the episode and learning all about the power of encoding, I want you to give us a call at 240-650-9856. The number is in your show notes. And I want you to spell your name in binary. Once you listen to the episode, it'll make more sense. We're going to play our favorite recordings next episode, so make it good and entertaining and fun. And if we pick your awesome recording, you'll get a beautiful hand-drawn postcard from Vaidehi herself. This season of BaseCS is brought to you by DevDiscuss. DevDiscuss is a show I work on with the team at Dev, an international supportive community for developers. The show addresses the many burning topics that pop up on Dev every day and is hosted by Jess Lee and Ben Halper, two of Dev's co-founders. Past episodes have included unpopular opinions with Kelsey Hightower, staff developer advocate at Google Cloud and a legendary voice in tech.
So an unpopular opinion should be like, computers were a mistake. Was was this all worth it?
And how changing your name is a difficult, unsolved, and sometimes personally devastating problem in tech.
I basically walk through this world, through this minefield of not knowing when I'm going to have this like sort of deep emotional wound reopened.
As well as how little known tools can have big productivity gains.
And I think it gives me the sense of structure, which I really enjoy. And also you can color code different things.
Each episode features interesting guests from diverse backgrounds who are active in the software space. This podcast is your place for burning tech questions, answers, and genuine conversations. And we also end each episode with commentary from the everyday developers who call Dev home.
You'd be surprised how many things making music and coding have in common.
True to the Dev community, DevDiscuss wouldn't be possible without the input from all of you. So listen, rate, and subscribe to DevDiscuss wherever you get your podcasts.
And to be fair, that blog post is also about hexes, but encoding itself is a pretty special and important and pretty big topic. So we're going to focus this episode on digging into that. So last week, we talked about bits and bytes and binary, and it all sounded very smart. I definitely felt very smart once I figured out how to convert and write the numbers 3 and 4 in binary. But I think by the time we got to talking about bytes and the fact that there's 256 permutations of bytes, it was pretty clear that binary isn't the easiest thing to read or to use, especially as humans. So if we wanted to take something a little bit more complicated and spell your name in binary, do you want to tell us what that would be?
Yes. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
I would like to introduce myself as 0110100100001 0110100100100100. Oh my god, I sound like a robot. 100011001001001000. Almost there. 0110100001. I don't know why my parents named me such a long name. But it's lovely to meet you. That's my name.
And the best part about the way you said that is the fact that you use inflection. Like, I saw you trying to make it interesting, and it still sounded very robotic and very not very human friendly. So is there a different way that is also friendly for computers, but a little bit more accessible to us humans as well?
Yes. Thank God. There really are. One of the ways that we can make sense of binary but not actually have to, you know, say it all out the way we just did is through encoding. Mm. What encoding basically allows us to do is to translate between different representations of all the stuff I just said so that we don't have to worry about binary, but we can kind of translate between it. And I like to think of it kind of as like the Rosetta Stone for computers.
Mm.
And encoding is like different versions of that, where you have different types of Rosetta Stones that will allow you to kind of talk to a computer and be like, when I say 010001, I'm going to not say that, but that's what I'm really saying with this representation.
Mm-hmm.
So encoding schemes allow us to spell and say things and write things and represent things that are computer friendly because computers know how to translate between them, but are also human friendly.
So I assume that the point of encoding is really to help us out, not really the computer, right? Because the computer is totally fine in zeros and ones. And if we could write in zeros and ones fluently and, you know, not make mistakes, then the computer doesn't really care,
right?
Like the encoding is really to make it easier for us to talk to the computer.
Yeah. It can be really handy if you have developers that are working in different languages, or if you have a website that's in different languages and you want to encode things in different languages. Because as humans, we have different ways of communicating with each other, right? It's not just English.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you wanted to be able to represent your website in Chinese, it's all zeros and ones to the computer, but like you might want to not represent the letter A as a letter A. You might want to represent it as something else.
Mm-hmm.
So encoding schemes can also help us do that.
Yeah. So in that way, it really is like the Rosetta Stone, which means that there are different types of encodings. What are some of the popular ones?
One of them is one that a lot of developers might be familiar with, which is Unicode.
Definitely heard of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually, even if you've never used it, you might have heard it mentioned.
Yeah.
Then there's also Base64 encoding, which is probably one of the ones that's well known in terms of security because
I was like, where do I know that from?
Yeah.
Yes, security. That makes
sense.
Yeah,
because it allows for a lot of different permutations in one representation since there's 64 values possible per digit.
So is that basically compared to like Base 2, base 10, now there's base 64.
Yep.
Is that the idea?
Same idea. Same idea.
Very
but
cool.
It makes it like more secure in a way because before you even increment a digit, you have 64 values per digit.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have like a 20 character long string that's base 64 encoded. It's really hard to crack that if you're using it in a secure way.
Mm.
There's also HTML encoding, which allows you to represent HTML elements in an encoded fashion.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, so Unicode, that's probably the one that might be most familiar. At least to me, it's very familiar, but I don't really remember why I've heard of it. Where would I have seen that?
So if you've ever like worked in a text editor and like copied and pasted a heart, or like there's actually also like
I always copy and paste hearts.
This is how I always think about it. Like I'm always copying and pasting hearts into my text editor and then it shows up as a little Unicode heart. And if you've ever like used the short, like the Unicode version of an M-dash, which I think is like ampersand.
Oh, yes.
Semicolon, something like that. I can't ever remember. But it's like that, right? And it's like you generally are encouraged to use those and not the characters because you want to encode it so that if it's used in a different context or if your website is served in a different way, like you don't want to ever hard code those things. You want to make it encodable so that wherever it's being read, it will be usable.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so in that example with the ampersand, because I've used that before because I've trying to think. Oh, yeah, it's my RSS feed. When I upload the Code to Be podcast, if I have the literal M dash instead of the ampersand, it tells me that my feed is invalid and it totally freaks out.
Yeah.
But I don't actually know why. Why is the Unicode version better than just me actually typing M dash?
My guess would be that in your RSS feed, like something about it is set up so that it encodes the text that you have to make it easily probably translatable, or probably the website itself, wherever you're hosting it, is encoding everything. So it wants the characters to be encoded. And a lot of websites these days are encoded and you're just reading an encoded, you know, a unicoded version of it. But it's highly likely that, you know, the thing that you're interacting with is unicoded. And in the case of your RSS feed, it's like looking for the Unicode character of that and it doesn't know how to translate the thing you gave it.
If I have the heart, right, the heart that we talked about, copying and pasting everywhere, the heart that I see on the screen that's an actual heart, what is the relationship between that and like the Unicode for the heart? So is it that the heart I see is after the encoding has happened and that's like the browser's interpretation of that Unicode, or is it something else?
Yes. So you're right that what you see is the interpretive version of whatever was in the text. So what was in the text when it got to the browser was probably like, I don't know, ampersand heart or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. In order for the characters that you want to show on your website to be displayed in HTML, there has to be a way to decode what it is that you're trying to put into the website. So like you want to display a heart on your website, you need to have a translatable version so that when you put it into the HTML, it renders as a real thing. And that's where Unicode comes in.
Okay, so I just looked up the Unicode for... Okay, apparently there are many types of hearts. That's one thing I'm appreciating. Yes. There's like a white heart. There's like a black heart. There's like a heavy black heart. I'm like, okay. But the Unicode for a black heart is U, capital U, plus 2665. So if I give that to the browser, then the browser looks at that and says, oh, you want me to display a black heart. And now I will show that to the screen. And then what the user sees is a picture of a black heart.
Yep.
Is that basically how that works?
Yep.
Okay. Very cool. So is that how we are able to see emojis?
Yeah. I mean, if you start thinking about like when you've seen really wonky things show up when an emoji should show up.
Yeah.
It has to do with something not being encoded correctly because it was like,
yeah,
I don't know what this is, so I'm going to just put a question mark. You didn't tell me. I'm a computer. I just do what I'm told.
Oh, very cool. Okay, that clears up a lot of stuff. Okay, neat. So another popular type of encoding is ASCII. Tell us about ASCII. What is that?
So ASCII is kind of like the original Rosetta Stone. And it's the original version of ASCII had a way to encode 128 different values. So they were pretty simple to begin with. Basically, ASCII was like a way to encode between things like capital letters, lowercase letters, numbers, things like question marks, semicolons, greater than signs. But then it also had the ability to encode things like null or like empty values and tabs and spaces and like the start of a text and a heading and the end of a text. But one of the ways that it was very limited was that, I mean, part of it was because it only had 128 possible translations or values.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a lot.
Yeah, it's really not. Part of the limitation of that was it really only accounted for English because it has all the the capital letters and lowercase letters of the English language, which, as you can imagine, is like, okay, but the world doesn't only speak English. So the original ASCII encoding scheme had some limitations and drawbacks to it.
Okay, so that was the original ASCII encoding scheme, which you said has 128 possible translations. Is there an updated version of that?
Yeah. So this happened somewhere in Europe, which makes sense because there's lots of European languages with interesting characters. But basically what they realized was 128 possible values basically means that you are using 7 bits out of 8 possible bits in a byte. So what someone really smart in Europe did was look at that and be like, hang on, if we're anyways representing each of these characters with 8 digits, that is to say 8 bits for 1 byte of information, why don't we just use that 8th digit? And then instead of 128 permutations, 128 different things we can represent, we would actually increase this table and allow us to represent 256 things. And that is how the ASCII extended table came to be. And it basically doubled the size of the table.
Yeah, that's a big jump.
Yeah. So basically, if you start thinking about the fact that one bit has only 2 possible, you know, digits to it, but then by just making use of one more digit in a byte, they totally expanded how many things we could put into our encoding table.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's so many cool characters in it now. Like there's like a division sign. There's like, you know, pi is in there. The infinity symbol. All these letters that I don't know how to pronounce.
So that's what I find so interesting about this is, you know, even if you look at just the first 128 possible translations in that original ASCII encoding scheme, they're filled with a lot of, well, as you mentioned, like English ideas, like English words, characters, concepts. You know, they're all about like human communication, mm-hmm. which to me is really interesting because when I think about computer science and programming, I still have this idea that it's very mathy and it's very, you know, scientific and equations and formulas and that kind of thing. So the fact that, you know, the pi symbol and those other things came in later in the extended version is interesting. It kind of makes me reevaluate the way I think about computer science. And, you know, is it really about making things very mathematical and computational in that sense? Or is it maybe a little bit more about how humans communicate and how to explain to the computer different ways to better understand us as we are?
Yeah. And it's funny because it was only when humans were like, oh, wait, they didn't make anything for us to encode our stuff. We got to figure out a way to tell the computer how to do that.
Okay, so if we look at the ASCII table, link to that is in your show notes, we see a bunch of different columns. So we have a column for, I think it is dec, which I'm going to assume is short for a decimal. Mm-hmm. And then we have hex, and then we have oct, and then we have, is it char or car? How do you?
I say char. Say that.
I think it's char, right?
But it's short for character.
We'll go with char. Yeah, right. Yes. Short for character. So we have all these different columns. Why do we have so many things?
Well, it basically is because it's like the Rosetta Stone. It's allowing us to translate between a character or char and its decimal version or its hexadecimal version or its octal mm-hmm. version, which based on what you're trying to do, you might care about that, right? You might be interested in looking at how to represent something in its octal form, or you might have a string of octals and be like, what does this actually say? And then you might want mm-hmm. to decode it. And then that way you can basically use this table and look up the thing that you have and find out how to translate it into its either its character format or translate it between one number system to another.
So when I was looking at this table, I was expecting to see a column for like binary. Like I was expecting to see a bit section, a byte section, something that connects us back to what we were talking about last episode and how we started this episode by saying, you know, spelling Vaidehi in binary is really, really long. How do we make that shorter and more human friendly? So how can we use this chart to get us from this encoding to that really, really long spelling of your name in binary?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the reason that binary is not really in the ASCII table is because we generally as humans aren't really concerned with converting between a character to binary. And that's why we have encoding. So what we usually do is we are worried or concerning ourselves with, okay, how can I convert this into hex, for example? And how can I convert it into that? And then I can rely on the computer to know how to convert this down into binary. And that's why, you know, you and I don't ever have to be like, okay, how are we going to turn Saran into binary? Like, here we go. But basically, if you wanted to know how to do this, like if you wanted to be able to convert it into binary, the real world answer to that is I would Google my name and be like, string to binary converter, and then write my name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is like an easy way to do
like
it.
Like a true developer. That's right. Uh-huh.
Because I'm like, I don't need to do the math part all the time.
Yeah.
It's going to take a long time. But if you wanted to use the ASCII table explicitly, what you could do is you could look up the character. For example, if we're saying like my name, I would look up the character V, and let's say capital V. And it turns out capital V in hex is 56. Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking at the column that has V in it. And then I see, okay, 56 is the hex representation. And it turns out 86 is the decimal representation. And so maybe I want to represent my name in hex. I could basically look up each character of my name and find the hex version. And then depending on what I'm trying to do, I could rely on the computer to take those hexadecimals or, you know, octals or whatever and do whatever it needs to do with it to convert it down into binary. Because usually I'm not ever going to tell, you know, I'm not going to ever worry about telling the computer, hey, take this and turn it into binary.
Okay, so this encoding system is really for us. And then it sounds like the computer has its own different interpretation translation system where it takes these, what do you call the result of what we use in the encoding table? Like the encoded, like return value? How do
sure.
you?
Yeah, that seems yeah, great. Okay. We should call it that. Sure. But it's like, yeah, okay. It's like whatever, like the hex version of it or the encoded version of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we take that, we give it to the computer. So the computer must have its own system for saying, okay, Vaidehi just gave me the hex value 56, and I need to figure out what to do with that. So what is the computer's system called? Is that also encoding or is that something else?
To be honest, I don't even know. I don't know how the computer actually does that. And for the most part, like when I write my name, I don't even have to write 56, right? I just put V. Mm-hmm. So the computer is actually like taking that V and turning it into binary, possibly using some sort of internal encoding or whatever. But even I don't have to use ASCII to communicate with the computer usually. What we usually use ASCII for is if we're sending something, you know, from our browser, like, and we want to open it into a new tab and like we're communicating between requests or something like that, or we want to jumble up a bunch of words into something that's very secure but also easy to decrypt for the computer. That's usually when we're going to deal with it. But like even you and I don't have to type with ASCII into our computers. It's internally like to communicate between parts of, you know, web applications, or if you need to do something to safeguard some important data, but you don't want to make it human readable, but you want to make it computer readable.
Yeah. So we talked about the different types of encoding schemes and the different systems that we can use. And it sounds like a lot of it is good to know information, but really it's internal stuff the computer thinks about and implements without us having to really worry about it actively as developers. Is there any type of encoding system that you feel like we should study or dig into a little bit better? Or is it all just kind of helpful information?
I think it's good to know what encoding really is, especially as developers. You are going to run into some time where you're going to see like an ampersand something, 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 and be like, what is that? So if you know that it's Unicode, or you know how to look for what it is, or if you know why, like if you see something like UTF-8 and you're like, why does this need to be UTF-8? What is UTF-8? Which is actually just one way of encoding Unicode characters. Oh. Like it's good to know what these things are. So that, you know, it makes Googling a lot easier, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
And it makes it easy to, if you open up a file and it looks like a bunch of nonsense, you know that there's something wrong with your encoding. Or maybe you're not using the right thing to view it, or you need to decode it in a different way. Like just knowing that helps you debug things a lot faster, because you know how computers are really talking to one another, and you know that like maybe there was something that got lost in translation along the way,
yeah,
even if you don't have to use it explicitly in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, and I think that's true for a lot of programming things. You know, the more you can understand the way frameworks work or languages work or, you know, how it actually implements things, it gets a lot easier to debug things and figure out what's going on when things don't work the way that you expect them to. So
yeah, totally.
And that's our second episode of the BaseCS podcast. So let us know what you think. And make sure to give us a call at 240-650-9856 and leave us your binary note. And if we pick your awesome recording, you'll get a beautiful hand-drawn postcard from Vaidehi herself. Make sure to also check out Vaidehi's blog post on encoding. Links to all of those things are in your show notes. Also, make sure to take a listen to the Dev Discuss podcast that I helped make. It's the first original podcast from Dev, a global community of software developers of all backgrounds and experience levels. And the show covers burning topics that impact the daily lives of programmers and beyond. Hosted by Dev co-founders Ben Halpern and Jess Lee.
Vaidehi, you want to say goodbye?
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening.